Yeah. Thank you. And we're on to item 15, elk general season and special permit regulations, briefing and public hearing. Jerry, you're back on.
Mr. Chair,
thank you. Want me to say it again?
It takes time.
Yes, sir. I will work on that. Status of elk populations in the state. Right now, in most places, we're doing relatively well. The Yakima population is at objective, and we're recommending adjusting some special permits, both up and down, depending on the permit allocation formula. And we are backing off a little bit on our cow tags there. We had higher numbers there, and now we think we've got them kind of where we want them again. On the Clackamas population, I'll show you another graph in a second, but that population is well above objective. We increased the antlerless special permits last year. Didn't really get the kind of success rates that we were hoping for, and so we will be recommending upping those a little bit more, and also opening the antlerless general season opportunity for archery. In the Blue Mountains, doing well, pretty much status quo recommendations on that. Mount St. Helens, we feel like we're much better shape with that now, closer to an objective. Status quo on the bull permits for the most part. We've already backed off on the antlerless opportunity there. Nooksack population, we're still slightly below objective, but really not too far. We're pretty much coming status quo on the special permits, and I'll show you where we're shifting the antlerless permits to some other user groups in a slide or two. The rest of these populations we're mostly managing using the harvest data. They're either difficult populations to count, or we don't have the resources, or both. So, getting into the good parts of this. For early archery, for the last 6 years, our early archery season has opened on the Tuesday after Labor Day, and it's been a 13-day season. The motivation for that season structure came from Game Management Advisory Council. There was a fair amount of debate within the members of GMAC that there might be a disproportionate sort of per capita harvest of bulls by the various user groups. And the other two user groups were expressing concerns about the archer user group. And so a shift was made to put that season a little bit earlier to see if that would have any change to that. We really didn't see any kind of a change in the proportions of bulls taken in the last 6 years. It's not making any change to the per capita bull harvest. Archers are going to harvest what they're going to harvest. And under that current restriction, fire restrictions, or current season, the fire restrictions have been pretty problematic. Hot weather, processing meat, getting meat out of the woods, very problematic. So our recommendation is moving that season later. We're recommending starting the season the Saturday after Labor Day and still retaining a 13-day season. We had to shift some other things around quite a bit to shoehorn that in, but I think we've mostly done that. For muzzleloader elk, muzzleloaders have always gotten sort of the short end of the stick in this state. Currently, out of the 150 GMUs we have in the state of Washington, there are currently 50 that are without general muzzleloader opportunity. We're recommending opening 27 of those to general muzzleloader season, 26 in the early, and one in the late. So this gives you an idea of what the current is and what the proposed is. And so the blue crosshatched GMUs are the GMUs that are currently have an early muzzleloader season. The red crosshatch GMUs are the GMUs that we're recommending be open to an early muzzleloader season starting in 2015. I told you about the Clackam elk population being above objective. We talked about this last year and the year before that and the year before that. We just completed our aerial surveys the last 2 weeks. This year we're a little over 6,100 animals is the estimate, and that's why we're coming in with even additional antlerless opportunity. This is a challenging population for us to manage because even though we're well above objective for the total population, we're still having a real challenge meeting our post-hunt bull ratio objectives. So we're still coming up a little bit short on that. We typically like to see a range of about 12 to 20 bulls post-hunt, and we're still coming up in at about 10, 11 always, not quite getting there. These are the proposed changes for the special permits. You see we're recommending an increase for modern firearm, moving archery to a general season, an increase for muzzleloader, but also establishing some youth, senior, and disabled special permit hunts that weren't there before. It's 855 permits this year, but that also includes the archery general season. In addition, we still have the Clackam bull study going on. One of the challenges on managing this population and trying to measure our post-hunt bull objectives is that we know that we're not counting all of the bulls when we count. We know we have these mystery bulls that everybody sees in the summer and the fall, and when it's time for us to do aerial surveys in the winter, they've disappeared. So we've been hanging some radio collars on elk and figuring out where these guys are going. It's working out pretty well for us, solving some of those mysteries. They're going in about three different directions, but they are leaving traditional survey areas where we survey on winter range. So currently we've got about eight bulls on the air. We've had some challenges with radio callers, but we always have that, and that's that kind of goes with the territory. Sometimes it's electronics, sometimes it's mechanics, sometimes people remove animals and destroy callers because they don't want us to know about it. So we hope to have a final capture this summer. And what we're going to get out of this this little three-year study is the seasonal distribution of those mystery bulls, get a better idea of what's going on with this segregation in the wintertime. We'll get an estimate of survival on these adult bulls, which is important to everyone. And we'll get some information on habitat selection, and ultimately we'll probably be having discussions about how we're going to adjust those survey protocols to better manage and measure that population. For the Nooksack herd, as I said, it's just a hair below objective. The bull permits are remaining stable for right now, at least in our recommendation. The antlerless special permits in elk area 4941, we're recommending offer in the youth, senior, and disabled categories. And those antlerless permits are intended to mitigate some of the elk damage that we have on the valley floor. But the additional damage resolution work will really be handled by our wildlife conflict section. That's really their wheelhouse now. Another quick update, hoof disease in the Mount St. Helens and Willapa Hills populations. So the hoof disease technical advisory group came to a consensus in June of last year, and they made a written statement that said, to the world, available evidence is consistent that the disease is an infectious bacterial disease. We're now calling it treponeme-associated hoof disease, TAHD, and it most resembles hoof disease in domestic sheep, something called CODD. And so the the way it presents and the way it progresses looks similar to some things in cattle, but much more similar to things in domestic sheep. Environmental factors, as you know, wet conditions, and probably helps with initiation of the disease and spread of the disease, but we are seeing the disease spreading over quite a wide area now, and we're going to continue to work with those collaborators on the technical group. We have two more efforts that are just getting underway now. One is to get a prevalence and distribution measure. So we did a pilot study in August of 2014. Our intent was to use citizen scientists to help us get a better idea on where this hoof disease is and where the leading edge is sort of progressing across the landscape. From that pilot study, we developed a final comprehensive survey. We got over 300 volunteers trained up and equipped and lined out in February. We've got another 100 on the waiting list, so we're really happy about the participation from citizens on this one. Folks really care about this, and they want to help in any way they can. We've got almost 200 sampling points, and we're working in 9 counties to do this work. It began this month, and it'll continue for this season to the end of April. And then parallel to that, we also have a hoof disease survival and reproduction study. So the last couple of weeks of February, our folks captured a number of elk, put radio collars on them. We're going to do a 4-year study on adult females. We're currently have on the air 57 animals that have the disease and 20 that are functioning as controls. And we're going to follow them, try to get calf at heel numbers during the calving season. We're looking at body condition when we have the animals in hand. We're pulling teeth to get age, and of course we're doing a fairly extensive sampling and photography and sending samples off to the various laboratories when we capture those animals as well. And then in the fall, we'll also do an organ sample collection. That helps us measure body condition from these animals as well, if we get the right pieces, parts from folks. And so we'll be doing that again this fall. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Now, on your control animals, are those healthy animals that do not have the hoof rot?
That's an excellent question. In some of the places where we were capturing elk, we had a really challenging time capturing animals that we thought might be a control animal, an animal that was, for all appearances, was clean of the disease. You would see them from the air, they looked really good, you would dart them, you would get on the ground, and sure enough, they've got the problem. So the intent, yes, is for these animals to be controls that don't have the disease at capture. And so if they develop the disease, hopefully we'll be able to pick that up. Or if they were at such an early stage that we couldn't detect any problems while we had the animal on hand, then we'll see that progression. I think that's a little less likely because our veterinarian handled all of these animals, and she's gotten a look at an awful lot of hooves anymore on this hoof disease problem. But yes, we hope they're controls. We hope they're disease-free. But one of the things that we'll measure is, over the course of the study, do they develop the problem?
Why I ask, when you, I hearken back to where you said it was very similar with sheep. We used to run quite a few sheep and dealt with foot rot on a fairly regular basis until we found 100% way to get rid of it. And that was just if they had hoof rot, we got rid of them. And we just found in the sheep that if there were some that were susceptible and others that weren't. Mm-hmm. And that's just the way we dealt with the deal. So I'm just curious if we're going to see some parallels. That's why the control interested me. Thank you.
Right. So to summarize, our elk hunting season recommendations for this 3-year package. We recommend moving the early archery season to the first Saturday after Labor Day, retaining that 13-day season. Open more GMUs to the early muzzleloader season. Open the Margaret unit, 524, to a general season. I mentioned this when I was going through the elk areas, and you'll get another look at it when I do the GMU boundaries, but because of the changes in land ownership and land access, it's really not a GMU that's conducive to a special permit quality hunt anymore, and so we're recommending turning most of that into a general season opportunity. We're proposing increasing the antlerless opportunity on the clock and population, reducing slightly the antlerless permits for Mount St. Helens and Yakima. And then, of course, as we do every year, we adjust the special permits through the special permit allocation formula on those quality hunts that we offer to all three user groups, and we adjust the antlerless permits to address population control and or damage issues. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
As you heard before, I'm with the Washington State Bow Hunters, and so I'm here to talk about that, moving the early archery start to the Saturday after Labor Day. And what I've heard vastly overall is people are happy about it. People actually feel like they have hope that they might be able to hear a bull bugle in the woods this year. Are they going to kill any more animals? No. No, we're not going to take any more animals because we changed the season dates. We could make it a full 30-day season, the same as Idaho does, and end up with roughly the same outcome of success ratio. So what we've done is a very good thing with that one proposal. You made a lot of people really happy, and you're seeing people want to switch to archery just because of it. We increased the number of archers. Our allocation is actually going to go down for the number of animals we're allowed to harvest because of the 90-10 rule where 10% of the hunters are going to kill 90% of the elk. Changing the length in the season out, you're just giving people more hope. We have a 13-day season now. We'd sure like to get back the 14 days or the 15 days, and it's not going to hurt the resource one bit, and you're just going to keep making people happier and happier and happier. The more opportunity you can give them, the more hope you can give them. So that was the one major thing that we wanted to stress, is that proposal is a very good one to move that to the first Saturday after Labor Day. Gives families two weekends to hunt for the weekend hunters. For the rest of us that take all of September off and hunt every day of September, then it gives us a little different timing that we can work with and be able to hunt elsewhere. So thank you for that proposal to the Fish and Wildlife Department, and I really hope that the commission would accept that. Thank you.
I'd also like to just say that recommendation really was public-driven. We heard so much from the archery hunting community that it was something that we really felt we needed to propose.
And on Jerry's behalf, we wanted to get that changed a couple years ago, but we had the governor's moratorium against any unnecessary changes, and that really ticked a lot of people off that didn't understand why it couldn't get changed. So now that we have that moratorium lifted, we've been able to work with Jerry and get that done.